This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jenny hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Just want to do things my own way, you know.
I lost my mind again, out where the river swells with rain. She kindly took me in, made me feel I was not the one to blame. As change was blowing in the trees.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast. Broadcasting worldwide in beautiful high-definition audio or something quite like it to all four corners of this bluish-green planet that we call our Earth. From the cozy confines of Trinidad World Recording Studios, fans, how are you? Phil here with you. Once again, I've been out at the front lines, and now I am back with the news. How's everybody doing out there, everyone? We've missed you since last week. We've enjoyed doing these podcasts again, keeping it flowing, keeping the information and the news flowing forth, as we should have forever and ever. As we have forever and ever, but if you have followed this podcast, we had somewhat of a respite, somewhat of a break there for a little while. As we worked and toured and recorded and moved studios and so much else. I didn't mention this because it was such sad and heartbreaking news, but our studio in Dallas a few weeks back got broken into. Oh, man. Richard and JW's duplex over there got broken into. Everything stolen. I'm telling you, all the guitars, everything, just a disaster, just a crushing deal. But I'm pleased to report little by little, they got this detective, JW and Richard, our keyboard player, and Blue, our bass player, hired a detective or got with a detective, and man, they hunted all this gear down, man. There's one by one. The Strat came back, and the Tele, and the bass, and the everything. So we got everything back. So it had a happy ending. So I am thrilled. Because let me tell you what, man, I've told the story a million times about my van, the full band van getting stolen. When was that? 2005 or so. Got stolen out of the parking lot at a Motel 6 in East Houston. And never saw another item again. Never saw another, you know, one of my guitars or bass, drum set, amps. We lost everything. And about 20 cases of beer that we had that Budweiser had given us at some festival. So, it is with great joy and a feeling of humble gratitude that I'm happy to report that, of course, we were just going to soldier on anyway. It wasn't nothing stops you in this business. Nothing stops P2 and the full band and Trinidad World Recording. We just soldier on, man. You know, a solo, the Maria solo played on a vintage Telecaster, or it played on a $199 Squire. It has the same effect, does it not? Well, that's my opinion anyway. I hope it's true. I think it's true. Well, how you doing, everybody out there? Man, oh man. Did I tell you a little while back? I got a bunch of kids here in the house. We cut the cable. Cable television, a little while back. It's something I'd kicked around for a long time. There's, you know, of course, a billion stations. And I was intrigued. A friend of mine had an antenna, just like a HD antenna TV deal to pick up the local stations. Then he said, man, I got that. I got Apple TV. You know, I just bought it for $100 and that's all I got. Now, we have high-speed internet in the house, so you got that and your router and everything. But other than that, nothing. So, it's been a little bit painful when something's on, a sports event is on, like I've got the ESPN app, so I can watch ESPN, which is about the only reason I ever got cable in the first place. And we've got you know, Netflix and all that kind of stuff on our Apple TV, which has turned me into somewhat of a interesting type of a TV watcher. So every night, you know, we get on the couch, me and my wife, we kind of stroll through, hey, what do we got? And we start just going through like documentaries and whatever. So we'll just watch whatever kind of comes up on the menu. So we're going to get into that today, some things I've seen recently, some music documentaries and things like that here in a little bit. Some P2 music doc reviews. Oh, man, I saw the Eagles movie. I saw the Ginger Baker crazy movie. Oh, gosh, Muscle Shoals, the Levon Helm documentary, so many more. We'll hit some of those here at the end of the show. But right now, I want to talk, and, you know, I'm always encouraged also, people watch, this is a lot of people say, the golden age of television, right? I mean, you know, you can binge watch, you know, these series come out, and you can watch these shows on Netflix. And I've been into it, been watching some of them. I'm always getting recommended from people. I'm always seeing, you know, stuff on Netflix. This is what everybody watches. Check it out. All 120 episodes or whatever. But that's a big investment. Big investment to do those things, of course. So I'm always a little hesitant. But I've gone all in on a couple of them. And I've watched House of Cards. And I watched Mad Men. And I've, you know, this and that. Started Peaky Blinders. But man, I'll tell you what, I've come to a conclusion about myself and about television, and hey, I know I'm Phil the Square, Phil the Softy, Phil the Good Old Days Syndrome guy, but I wear that with like a badge of honor. But let me just say this, man, here's the problem with some of these shows. Man, I'm going to make this declaration when it comes to TV. You ready? Are you listening? Here it comes. I'm done with darkness. I'm done with darkness. What are you talking about, Phil? I'll tell you what, man. These shows, okay, with one notable exception that I'll get to in a minute, are just, where did it get written that to have a show, it needs to be just an orgy of blood, of violence, of sex, of just these shows, these series, Mad Men, Boardwalk Empire, Breaking Bad, Peaky Blinders, I started watching the other night. I mean, it's just, I mean, in the first 15 minutes, you, on all those shows, you can see someone, you know, having sex, someone getting punched in the face, just blood splattering, awful people being terrible to their wives, being terrible to their children. Kevin Spacey in House of Cards. I mean, it's all good acting. He's good in it. But it's just this onslaught of brutality. As I sit on my couch, I got some red wine tea. Oh, let's watch this show I heard was really good. And the next thing I know, I'm watching some guy, smoking black tar heroin and, you know, punching a hooker in the face. This is like family entertainment now. And I say to people who recommend it, I'm like, God, man, I was a little bro. Oh, yeah, it's dark, man. But it's great. It's the greatest show ever, but it's dark. Well, what does this guy do? Yeah, he shot the guy's brains out, cooking meth. I'm just like, yeah, you know, I'm sure it's great. I must be alone in this because they're not making anything kind of fun, you know, out there. With one notable exception, one of my favorite shows, man, Downton Abbey. Oh, Phil, it's just, hello. You know, the British BBC show. But there's an important distinction. Now, Downton Abbey has some violence and some sex or something like that. But there's one key distinction if you've ever seen Downton Abbey. My wife loves these British shows. So we watch those a lot, and I love all things British. Downton Abbey has a very unique quality to it that none of these other shows have. Are you ready for this? Are you ready for this? They have, lean in, likable characters. Likable characters. You know, the Mrs. Hughes, who, you know, she's very nice. She runs the house, and Anna, and Bates, and the old Butler Carson. Hello, my lord. Lord Grantham. Oh, they're all very likable. What's his name? Kind of the villainous footman, Thomas. He's kind of a villain. He's up to no good. But the antagonists in the story are like World War and things like that that come about. I mean, there's some intrigue and there's sort of, you know, betrayal and stuff like that. But the main characters are all reasonably likable. And you know, it at least makes you want to watch it. I mean, good grief, man. I mean, was it Don Draper? What a genius. I'm like, man, it's just Don Draper in Mad Men. All those guys in Mad Men. All the people in House of Cards. All the people in Breaking Bad. It can all be summed up in this statement. Awful, despicable human beings doing awful, despicable things to other awful, despicable human beings. And when that happens for too long, me as a viewer anyway, I don't care. I don't have an emotional invested interest in anyone or anything. You know, this murdering son of a bitch, cokehead guy, I mean, he shot this other murdering cokehead reprobate. I just shrug. I'm like, oh, that was disgusting. I mean, at what point do we not have any heroes, man? You know what I'm saying? Am I just naive? Oh, Phil, come on, man. It's art, man. It's art. You know, and I get tired of hearing that, man. Oh, it's just serious, man. It's dark, but you know. I just get sick and tired of this anti-hero crap. It's just so much of it. It's all these shows are just people blowing people's brains out. I mean, why can't we have I don't even mean like a comedy. Like Downton Abbey's not a comedy. It's but the people in it are likable. And I think that lends itself, that really has more staying power and success than some of these other shows. Because, man, I just get I get worn out with it. Am I the only one? God, just the violence. And I mean, what else are you going to watch with your wife? I mean, are they even trying to, I mean, like Seinfeld or something? Are we not even trying to make those shows anymore? Yeah, I watch Portlandia, something like that, like a straight up zany comedy. I do watch those. But these quote-unquote drama series. And I know drama denotes a certain amount of darkness and intrigue that's going to be inherent in it. But I'm not kidding. Am I alone? I mean, most of them just don't have one decent person in the cast. And so you end up just kind of watching this orgy of depravity. And what's the use of that? I mean, I feel like any great song or great book or great art, there's got to be some reason you spend all this time reading that book or something. It's not just to totally make you throw the book down and turn the movie off and go, man, life sucks, then you die. I just don't think that's what great art is all about. I think there's got to be, not that it's got to have a happy ending, not that it's got to be all, you know, fun all the time, but man, there's got to be something inherently inspiring about it, or some sense of life's worth living, some sense of redemption, something. For God's sake, we need something. Where are the heroes, man? Where did we get into this spiral of just death, depravity, drug use, and murder? So I'm not buying in, man. If I see somebody recommends another show and some dude is just, you know, just doing all these horrible things, I'm just, yeah, it's dark, man. You'd love it. I'm just like, hey, if it's dark, I'm not going to love it. I'm done with it. And I've seen enough of it. I mean, even The Godfather, I always talk about The Godfather. It's dark. It's depraved. But man, there are lots of elements in The Godfather, if you go back and watch, that are, dare I say, positive. I mean, it's about family. It's about making it on your own. Now, I know they're all horrible. I mean, they're killing people and things like that, of course. I mean, but I think a lot of people who love these shows would point and go, well, you like The Godfather? That's dark. That's crazy. But The Godfather had layers. There was complexity there. And some would argue some of these shows have that too. But man, I haven't run across it too much. I haven't found a lot of redemption in Don Draper or in Kevin Spacey's character in House of Cards or any of the Breaking Bad. I'm just kind of like, dude, it's just the story of total human depravity, man. And I see that on the news every day. I mean, I am inundated with that. Everyone goes, well, that's what's real, man. I'm like, look, I know real, man. I'm out there in the world. I'm out there playing bars and whatever. We all see it all, don't we? I mean, it's in the news. It's constant. So I don't know. Call me old-fashioned. Call me a square. Call me no fun. But when I go to the movies or watch a show and I'm going to sit down, I just want a little entertainment. Is that too much to ask? A little levity. A little in something kind of insightful. You know, that's why I watch these documentaries. I mean, they can be sad, of course. But people don't even make documentaries just to go, yeah, I just want to show you how miserable this guy is and how he died. And he was just, it was just awful. Any documentary is not even going to get made unless it's got some, unless the story of the person or the whatever happened in real life, there's some redemption there. There's something inspiring. I mean, no one's even going to make that. But for some reason, these TV shows, they just keep layering it on. It's just, man, okay, this guy's going to be cheating on his wife. You know what? Let's not have him cheat on his wife. Let's just have him murder his mistress. Then he's hiding it. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's even better. And then at night, he's sitting there having a, he's sitting there in a chair. No, 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 wait, he's drunk. He's drunk in the chair. Okay, good. Even better, even better. No, 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 look, he's not even drinking. He's just, he's on heroin, man. He's on heroin. Yeah, 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 okay, okay. And now what? And just, and on it goes, man. On it goes, just forever, until they've got you watching the eighth or ninth episode, and I look at my wife, and we sit down and watch the next episode. This is what keeps happening, and you know what you're in for. You know, yeah, where was he last week? Yeah, man, he was plotting the murder of that guy. Yeah, and then he came home and punched his wife in the face, and just, yeah. So here we go, episode eight, you know. Get out the eggnog. I mean, it's just, it's terrible. I'm just like, I finally just go, you know what? I'm done with darkness. If that means I'm not an artist or something, I don't give a damn, man. Because you know what? I know I'm an artist, and I know I'm a guy that creates and likes to live life. So I'll be damned if I'm going to sit here and watch these shows that claim to be cutting edge and artistic and everything like that. If it's just going to tell me how awful everything is and subject me to murder, violence, and all sorts of awful things. There you have it. Phil is done with darkness. Done with darkness, man. Well, 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 let the emails come. Phil at philpritchard.com. Oh, Phil, but you're missing this. You need to watch this show, blah, blah, blah. Bring them on, man. I'll take anything. I'll take anything. Any suggestions? I know there are some shows out there that have some good qualities to them. But I tell you what, these the ones I'm mentioning, those are the ones people keep recommending. And I'm just, man, three or four episodes in, I'm just like, I'm exhausted. I feel like I've just been, feel like I need to take a shower after I watch it. Awful. But I do, as I said, this does lead me into watching a lot of documentaries and things, just getting away from fictional drama. Just horrible, horrible. So that's led me down the path of course, the neat thing about Netflix or any of these search online deals, you watch one documentary about the Beatles, it recommends a whole bunch of others at the bottom, and you're like, oh yeah, here's one about whatever, the Who or the band or whatever. So end up clicking around on all these other kinds of documentaries. I've been hearing about the Eagles documentary forever. The story of the Eagles. I think it was a Showtime or Cinemax, or they did a 2-hour, 3-hour documentary on them. You know, so I finally watched that. I saw that was on there. I said, man, I need to watch this thing. And I don't know. I've had a love hate relationship with the Eagles. I'd call it more of a hate-hate relationship. A hate-hate relationship with the Eagles. I say that in jest. And this documentary was very entertaining. Boy, that's something I've learned about these documentaries, man. It is so important to tell the story well. I mean, the subject matter can be fascinating and everything, but man, some of them are just too slow. They linger on one shot forever with no talking. You're just like, ugh. You know, I thought you were interested in the Indians. I go, I am, but the way they're showing this is just, it's no good, man. So the Eagles was very, very, very well produced. It goes from interview to interview, great old footage, bringing back old people, you know, David Geffen and people who were intimately involved in the beginning of the Eagles. So really insightful interviews, and it had a good pace to it. Great music, live footage. You take that for granted watching documentaries. Like, well, they're just showing what happened. That's how you make a documentary. But, man, I've seen a bunch of them, and it's not always the case. Some of them are just, they're just not put together very well. But the Eagles one is certainly of high, high quality. And my one concern always with the Eagles, my perspective, of course, I know all the hits like everybody else does, but I never bought their records or... And when someone would play them, I found that I knew all the words. You know, it's just one of those... They're one of those bands that... osmosis just sinks into you, just, you know, the songs. But I didn't really know a lot about the genesis of the band and what were their early albums and their later albums and all this. I learned a lot of what I had already thought about. And that was that the Eagles, more or less, were more about the fame and the being big time and being rich and being rock stars than they were about the music. Oh, maybe that's unfair to say, but man, I've seen interviews with Don Henley and Glenn Frey in other contexts throughout my life, and I'm always struck by how much they talk about, we're the biggest band in the world, and we sold 26 million albums, Hotel California's most played song on FM radio, whatever. They're always throwing out, even as a kid watching interviews with them on MTV, VH1, or whatever, they're always throwing out like their stats, like their numbers and their chart positions and their grosses on tours. And I'm always like, man, these guys seem very hung up on this. And as I'm watching the Eagles documentary, those early days, they make no apologies for it. And a lot of the guys like Jackson Browne and a lot of the guys in the band and their old managers, they all shrug and just go, yeah, man, Glenn Frey. I mean, he was all about, you know, being in a big band and wanting to be famous. You know, he talked about it all the time. And yeah, he wrote some pretty good songs. I just always thought Peaceful, Easy Feeling and those early Eagles songs, Tequila Sunrise and the slow ones, man. I would just take a nap. I'd just be like, man, well, the Eagles, blah. I mean, it's just strumming G, C, and D and some kind of weepy lyrics about the desert. I just wasn't that into it and was sort of felt somewhat redeemed to see that their first few records on Asylum, David Geffen's album, that's kind of what they were all about, you know, Desperado and all that. And then Geffen has the brilliant stroke that after, I think it was after just their third album, he just released, and they've had some hits, he releases their greatest hits, the Eagles' greatest hits, which at the time was laughable. You didn't do that till a career of a band was over. But as legend has it, that was the record everybody bought then. No one went back and bought those first two or three albums. They would just say, well, hell, just buy the Eagles' greatest hits. And that's become, of course, the greatest selling album of all time, next to Michael Jackson's Thriller, or the same sales. So a stroke of genius by David Geffen. In my view, some of it saw it as a sort of a financial move or kind of a cheap way to sell records. But man, it cemented the Eagles as they went forward from there. People were, you know, would go to their shows and they would know those, you know, 10 songs. Or they'd have a good base, you know, and wouldn't have to wade through their slow, la, 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 you know, Peaceful, Easy Feeling and all that early stuff. They'd know the hits and that was enough to keep moving. So I have never been a big fan of the Eagles. I was never convinced they were geniuses. I was never convinced they were super talented guys. I always did like Don Henley, although he's kind of a notorious bear, man, kind of a tough guy to work with. I think very kind of, David Geffen said it in the documentary, Don Henley, singer and drummer. He's just kind of a malcontent, just sort of a sourpuss. Anyone I'd run into that had worked with him and run across him, just roll their eyes and go, oh, man, Don Henley, what a bear, dude. He just gripes about the food backstage, the sound, the drum, just what, he's just never happy with anything. Always has a frown. You know, you look at any picture, that's just kind of how he is. And he's just sort of those malcontent kind of guys. So I've always just kind of not been too turned on by the whole Eagles thing. But I'll tell you one thing. You listening? And this is what makes it difficult to me and things I learned in the documentary that really brought things full circle. I freaking love Life in the Fast Lane. I always went, now there's a rock and roll tune right there. That is freaking music. Even as a kid, I just said, dude, I love that riff. The guitar playing everything. Well, sure enough, that's when our old friend Joe Walsh comes into the band. Joe Walsh, famous guitar player, drunk hotel destroyer from the James Gang. Successful solo artist in his own right back then. So Walsh gets into the Eagles, and man, that's the few parts of the Eagles I really like. Joe Walsh is in the studio playing guitar. So, you know, maybe that says something. He just kind of brought an edge and a craziness and a uniqueness to this acoustic, softy, you know, Air Supply rock band that we had before. So now you got crazy ass Joe Walsh in there. So, yeah, I just wasn't as familiar, like, when he was in the band. I kind of didn't know all the ins and outs of who was in the band and stuff. So, sure enough, in the documentary, I see that, oh, okay, so the songs that I really like were some of their middle period when Joe's in the band. Okay, that's just what I thought. I knew he'd done the Life in the Fast Lane riff and stuff. And I was also shocked to and again, not thinking a lot of Fry and Henley for all those years. God love them. But just as brilliant artists. Dude, I just was nodding my head when I learned that it was actually Don Felder, the other guitar player and somewhat lesser known of the Eagles. He had the opening intro and chord progression to Hotel California on a demo tape he had done and sent to Don Henley and Glenn, said, hey, here's something I'm messing around on. And Fry and Henley, to their credit, said, hey, that's something, let's work on that. But man, those chord changes and the guitar parts, and then we're just genius. And I don't care who you are. The sad fact about the Eagles is, as much as you want to decry them, maybe for their what did the dude say in Big Lebowski? It's not the Eagles, man. Not today. No way. You know I remember just laughing when he said that. I said, man, I know that feeling. Just God, not the Eagles. No. You know. You know, it's got its place, a lot of that stuff, but love them or not, hate them as you will, man, Hotel California, not just the song, not just the recording, the whole package is really one of the greatest, tracks just ever done, in rock and roll. And that's a cheap thing to say. Everybody knows that. I know that. I'm like, not this again. But man, there's a lot of nights where I'm driving back from a gig. It's late at night. It's 3 a.m. I got a cup of coffee. Just kind of skipping through the radio. And the opening chords come on. On a dark desert highway. And I want to change my initial reactions. Just, I'll change the station. I've heard this song a billion times. But there's sometimes, man, when you just turn it up a little bit and you just listen to the guitar playing and the whole thing about it, Henley's vocal, Hotel California, and you shake your head in amazement, man. I do anyway. And just go, man, this is just a perfect, great song. This is it's fantastic. It just really is. It's a journey. It's weird. It's mysterious. It's vivid. And just when you think you can't have a better great verses and instrumentation and choruses, ready to room at the Hotel California, you get to the end of the song and you've got that harmony duo guitar solo that has more than once brought tears to Phil Pritchett's eyes. Tears, my friends. I can sing every damn note. And man, when they come in at the end of it, just down, when Felder and Walsh are just harmonizing on those, you know, little triplets at the end, dude, I just shake my head, tears flying out of my eyes, and just say, it's the most beautiful thing ever. I hate the Eagles, but Hotel California is one of the greatest songs ever recorded, ever. And like I say, I think if it was just an acoustic tune, with them singing, it was on one of their early records, it wouldn't be what it is. But man, it took Joe Walsh, and it took that production, man. And the way it sounds today is fresh and as vivid and as timeless. So man, that's why I sat through the Eagles documentary for 3 hours, listening to Glenn Frey talk about how much cocaine he did, and Don Henley, how much money he made, and all this kind of crap, and just, wow, God, these guys are douchebags. Was to get to Joe Walsh, was to get to Hotel California, was to hear Don Felder talk about, making that demo and finding that demo, because there's real, real magic in that track, man. Undeniably so. So, hats off to the Eagles. Very entertaining documentary. And I highly recommend it. It's just fantastic. It's a great education on a kind of rock and roll history and a good inside look at everything. And above all things, very well done. Very, very watchable. Some of the other docs I've run into is the I'm Not In It For My Health, Levon Helm documentary about the late, great band drummer. Very well done also. But harder to watch. A sadder story, Levon Helm, who had been struggling with throat cancer. And this was towards the end of his life when he was having those concerts at his house in his barn. He'd have the family hoedown or something. And you could go to Levon Helm's farm and buy tickets and come in and watch him and his band play. Oh, I would love to have gone to one of those. And it only holds about 40, 50, 60, 100 people, something like that, in this little barn. And they do a show every week, and it sold out, and it helped him stay musical and stay financially solvent by doing these shows out at the farm. And, really, really great. I'm sad to say I didn't learn a whole lot watching it. I knew there was a lot of bitterness with the band, Robbie Robertson, the songwriter and kind of the band leader of the band, guitar player, had a lot of the songwriting credit, had all the songwriting credit, really, for those band hits, and that's where all the money is. And he had kind of taken all that money and walked off with it and lived a rich, rich life. And the rest of the guys in the band, if they weren't playing a gig or they weren't recording a new record, they wouldn't be getting paid anything for it. So the rest of them have kind of, a couple of them have died. Richard Manuel passed away years ago, as did Rick Danko. And Helm has now passed away. You've really only got Garth Hudson, the organist, keyboard player, and Robbie still alive. So the band story is kind of a hard one to watch, but it was entertaining. But there's a lot of footage in there of Helm going to the doctor, getting his throat looked at, and kind of getting some bad news and things like that. So you got to be in a certain mood or a certain band fan to really delve into that. So I enjoyed it as much as it could be enjoyed. One of the best ones out there is Beware of Mr. Baker, the story of very well done documentary on Ginger Baker, the great crazy drummer for Cream, drummer for Blind Faith, and really noted as one of the greatest drummers of all time. And they've got a lot of interviews with Jack Bruce and Eric Clapton, his Cream bandmates, talking about how great he is and how crazy he is. And so that is maybe one of the better ones to check out. Beware of Mr. Baker. He's a crazy old guy living in South Africa or somewhere, and his story is shocking, and I still say inspiring in some ways. But it's tough, man. These aging rock stars, there's a lot of them. For every one Eric Clapton who's still just, who's just sober and making great music and healthy, there's 100 of them out there. So, God, who was it? Was it said, man, for every one Robert Plant, there's 10 dead bodies or something. Is that what Rockstar said that? I can't remember. But that's just kind of the truth and a sad kind of deal. So take that in mind. Keep that in mind. One of our favorites, I know Richard Marshall, our keyboard player, has been, he's watched the Muscle Shoals documentary many, many, many times. And that one was fantastic about the sound of Muscle Shoals, Alabama. A little studio down there where they did all those, some of those early Aretha Franklin albums. Lynyrd Skynyrd was down there. A lot of the soul records and things like that. The studio band down there. So the Muscle Shoals, looking for it on Netflix. The Muscle Shoals documentary is fantastic. Levon Helm, a little darker. Beware of Mr. Baker. Fantastic, crazy, unbelievable. And of course, the Eagles, which a lot of you probably have already seen. So great. It's just so great, man. Remember I used to when I was growing up in high school or, college, you just had to kind of wait till VH1 Behind the Music came on. Like, oh, you just stopped whatever you were doing to watch the Tom Petty documentary or something. You couldn't go back and, watch it online or draw it up somewhere. Now you just sit there with a menu of all these films and all these, things and whatever you're in the mood for, and I won't watch them all. I don't watch the Eagle thing all in one night. I just kind of pause it. Oh, there's, an hour and a half left. I'll just watch it in a couple days later. It's fantastic, man. It's fantastic. And you know what? Yes, there's dark moments, but it's not all dark, man. The music is the light, folks. The light. Keep that in mind. So the moral of this episode's story is you can keep your heroin wife-beating dramas. You can keep those over there away from Phil. I'm going to seek out documentaries, life, inspiration. These are the things we stay alive for. Well, folks, thanks for joining us here on the podcast. Man, I feel bad for everybody who doesn't live in Dallas, Texas, and Fort Worth, who keeps seeing on the Facebook page, Phil's playing at the mansion, the Phil's British Are Coming band playing at the mansion. Because, dude, it is great. It's a residency unlike any other. You know, like Bob Schneider, he plays, the Saxon Pub every Monday night he has for 10 years. That's what we're doing down here at the mansion. We play there a few times a month. Starting next year, we're going to have Brit Weekend, a Friday and Saturday night, back-to-back, one weekend of every month. The British Are Coming. So I don't know. Hey, the mansion's expensive. You don't have to stay at the mansion. But maybe make it a goal of yours for 2015, if you hadn't seen the British band and you've seen a lot of Phil Pritchett shows in your time. Make a little note of it and say, hey, honey, let's get up to Dallas, Texas, man, or Fort Worth, stay in a hotel, and we'll get over there to the mansion about 9 o'clock, sit down and watch Phil and the boys put on their suits and their sunglasses and play old British rock songs, flop around on the stage, sweat and dance and jump around, talking British accents. It'll be a riot, man, and it will be. And, of course, Phil Pritchett and the full band. We're out there everywhere, too, man. We got a gig every month at the Rustic next year, a gig every month at the Mansion, the White Elephant, doing our thing, man, doing our thing. So, as always, and I plead with all of you, call me, 817-733-5256, or email me, phil@philpritchett.com, and just say, Phil, we're having a party. Phil, we're getting married. Phil, our son's going to high school. Whatever, we're having a party. What'll it take to get the band down here? We will work something out with you. We'll roll down there with a PA and just make it a one-of-a-kind, memorable event that you and all your guests will remember forever. That's what we do here, folks. Phil Pritchett with you here on the P2 Podcast, folks. Thanks for listening. We will be talking to you real soon here on the P2 Podcast. Until then, much tougher.